Hey, plant friends. Good to be back. Thanks for tuning in. For first-time listeners, my name is Simon Hill, and I'm the creator of plantproof.com and the Plant Proof podcast. This show is all about improving our overall consciousness so we can make healthier decisions in our lives. Each episode provides a really genuine and authentic look into a special guest's life. These are conversations that I am not paid to have and would have even if this show didn't exist. That's how passionate I am about getting into the minds of people who can inspire myself and the world, you guys, to reach our potential and live the very best lives that we can. For everyone sharing feedback about the Plant Proof podcast on social media, thank you so much. I've been especially loving the video stories some of you have been uploading, talking about the episodes and what you have learned. This week's special guest is Gaz Oakley. Gaz is a very well-known vegan chef originating from the United Kingdom, growing up in Cardiff, Wales. In the past 2 years, Gaz has taken plant-based cooking to a new level, becoming a pioneer in the area of recreating familiar flavors and textures from animal-based meals with his own vegan interpretations. In this time, he has amassed over 500,000 YouTube subscribers. In this episode, we cover Gaz's childhood life, his interests outside of cooking, how he developed his passion for cooking, why he left cooking and took up a job involving labor and sales, what inspired his transition to a plant-based diet, who inspires his recipe creations, tips for young vegan chefs, how he developed his incredible following on YouTube and Instagram, and much, much more. I love this combo with Gaz and really look forward to collaborating with him in the future. I hope you enjoy the episode. All right. Gaz Oakley, welcome to the Plant Proof podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great. And doing it in Bali as well.
Here we are. We're amongst the jungle. What are your first impressions of Ubud and Bali? It's the first time you've been here, right?
Yeah, or second? First time I've been here. My parents came 30 years ago. They told me how good it was for the last, all my life really. And amazingly, I've managed to bring them along with me. So no, it's great to be here. I'm blown away by the jungle atmosphere, and it's just a nice chilled out place, really.
We're literally looking out over the jungle and over some rice fields. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Now, how long was the flight? How long did it take you to get here?
It felt absolutely ages, actually. I'm not good with flying, and the whole journey in total was about 24 hours.
And it's worth it. What do you do on the plane for food? You bring your own food, or you eat the food?
Brought my own food. Luckily, in the UK, it's getting much better in airports now. You can get snacks, and so I took a lot on there. But, you know, we were catered for on the plane, which is amazing. Thai Airways had some stir-fried vegetables and rice. It was great.
Beautiful. And how long are you? You're in Ubud, just to paint a picture, for Bali Vegan Festival. How long are you here for? Any plans of going and seeing things, or what do you want to sort of tick off while you're here?
So I've got 14 days left, a week longer in Ubud, and then we're going to Canggu for the remainder of the Bali Vegan Festival. But I definitely want to do all the tourist stuff. I want to go and see the waterfalls, the rice fields, monkey forest today.
Just be careful of those monkeys.
I've heard.
keep your bananas in your back. Okay, so you grew up in Cardiff, right?
That's right.
Must be very different to Ubud, right?
Yeah, you get a few monkeys on nights out and on a Saturday night. But it's very different. I love Cardiff. I'm very proud to be from Cardiff. It's a small city in comparison to somewhere like London, but I'm very happy I grew up there.
And your sort of early childhood years, what was life like for you? Were you part of a sort of typical family in Cardiff with typical beliefs and values and hobbies?
Yeah, definitely. I've got an amazing family. Much of my sort of success over recent years is down to my family supporting me, I guess. And growing up, to be honest with you, my life and my family's life really revolved around sport. So my dad was the coach of my rugby team from when I was 6 years old all the way through to 16. And that's all I wanted to do. All I did was play sports. So rugby, football, swimming, running, boxing, so much sport. And that's all I really loved. So that's my earliest memories, was just playing sport.
And who do you follow? Who do you go for in the rugby and in the football?
Football, Cardiff and Swansea. Obviously, I'm a proud Welshman. Rugby, Wales. and any of the Welsh teams.
And sort of growing up, what role did food play, I guess? So were you, you know, eating and consuming sort of typical, you know, meals that, that people in Cardiff or in, across Britain would have been having as a family? And when did your real love and passion for food start?
Definitely. Yeah, well, I'm kind of lucky really that my my dad was always a keen cook. So we had cooking programs on in the house constantly. My dad would cook fresh meals every single night. He was inspired by people like Jamie Oliver, all the chefs really, Gordon Ramsay, Keith Floyd was another one that we watched all the time, Rick Stein, all these people are sort of household names in the UK. And I guess when I was growing up, I was really lucky to have, you know, freshly cooked food made for me every night. I was a little fussy when I was younger. My friends would come over and just absolutely devour the food that my dad cooked. And sometimes I wouldn't really enjoy it. And my mum would be like loving my friends and just like shunning me because I didn't finish my food, which was terrible looking back. But then as I got older, I started getting more adventurous and trying everything my dad made. And that is how I started cooking. I got involved. I started helping my dad from the age of probably 8 or 9. I just thought it was the thing to do. I was watching these cooking programs as well as sport, and just getting in the kitchen helping my dad was just what I enjoyed.
So you were learning all those skills of chopping and seasoning and, and everything from that's pretty early.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, you know, my dad isn't a chef, but he learned lots from recipe books and TV. So he passed on what knowledge he had to me. And it was just a way for me to be artistic, really. I really loved art in school and being creative. And it was just another thing for me to do that to express that creative side.
Going through school, did you have your eyes sort of set on a specific career? Did you see yourself as a career chef, or were you sort of, it was more of a hobby at that stage?
Well, to be honest with you, growing up in school, I hated school. I was constantly looking out the window at the rugby field or the football field, just wanting to be out there. And it wasn't until I got into high school, age 12, 13, 14, 15. Those are the years when my sort of focus switched from knowing I'm not going to play rugby for Wales and realizing that I really love cooking and this could be a serious career for me. I was obsessed with people like Gordon Ramsay, Michael Pierre White. I had all their books. I was watching all the TV documentaries, and all I wanted to do was become a full-time chef, get a Michelin star, go to Paris. All the things that Michael Pierre White and Gordon Ramsay did, I wanted to do, but better in a way. Very competitive.
And you were what, 14, 15?
I was very young, probably at that then when I was thinking that, I was probably about 12, 13.
Okay. So you had these beliefs and you know, motivations pretty early.
Yeah, the sports guys thought that whole side of me cooking was quite weird. I don't, because you either play sport or you're smart in schools in back home. So it's a bit, they thought it was a bit strange.
They'd be looking now on YouTube and going,
I get it. Yeah, they are big fans now. But even myself, I never imagined I'd be doing what I do now in terms of YouTube and books and things. I was sort of planning on going down the conventional route, which is you spend 30 years gaining experience in professional kitchens, and hopefully in those 30 years, I would have had my own restaurant and things like that. It got really serious when I could choose a subject for my GCSEs, which is a level in school around the age of 13 or 14, where you can choose additional subjects and they're your sort of main priority. And I took catering or cooking. I was one of 7 in the class, which was great because I had lots of attention from the teachers. And I just sort of excelled in those 2 years in catering, which was great. And that's when I knew I need to become a professional chef.
Can you remember those sort of early skills that you were picking up in that class? Like what were they teaching at that stage?
Very, very basic and traditional stuff like white sauces, crumbles, knife skills, boiling, cooking vegetables. Yeah, very simple stuff, but it was nice really because I wasn't very good in school ever in terms of academic wise, maths, science, all that stuff. But when I was doing this stuff in catering class, I thought I was the I was a legend. You know, I knew all the stuff they were teaching me before they told me it. So when they asked me to prepare a, I don't know, a broccoli or something, I could do it before everyone else did it.
That must have felt good knowing that, you know, I can excel in this.
Yeah, it was nice being top of the class for a change.
So what transpired, I guess, from these classes at school to then, did you go out and get a sort of first job as a kitchen hand, or what was your first experience in a sort of real life setting like?
Yeah, so I actually, there was an email sent to the school, and it was from ITV, which is a TV channel in the UK.
It's one of the biggest ones,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. And they basically asked if there's any students interested in cooking that wanted to go on a new program of theirs called Britain's Best Dish. And obviously me being so keen, I was like, yes, I want to go. So I auditioned at the age of 14 for this Britain's Best Dish program. And I made it through quite far in the competition, probably just because I was young. but I guess I had some skills. I got quite far in the competition, and the chefs who were judging the competition were quite well known. They were very experienced, and they said, actually, when I got kicked out of the competition, they said to me, oh, we're probably going to regret this in a few years' time when you've got a Michelin star. And that to me, I was like, yeah, I'm actually going to get that in my head. And that really, really spurred me on. And a few months later, we got the opportunity to go on work experience for 1 week. And I chose to go to a local hotel restaurant nearby me. And I was in work experience for 1 week. And what I learned in that week was more than I had learned my entire life cooking at home with my dad, watching TV programs, reading recipe books, and in catering. So I knew I just had to be there. I instantly got a part-time job in the hotel restaurant. So after school, I would go there and work and learn as much as I could. And then as soon as I turned 16, when I could leave school, I quit school and became a full-time chef. And that's where my professional cooking journey started.
And that must have been a big decision, I guess, for yourself and your family.
Yeah.
What was it like going to your family and saying, look, I'm certain I'm going to quit school and pursue cooking?
Well, I think I've always been really determined in anything I've done, always been quite stubborn in, always backed myself. So I think when I said that to my parents, they couldn't really sort of say no, because they've been so supportive all my life. They just want me to follow in my dreams and do what I want to do. So as much looking back, a 16-year-old kid at the end of the day, wanting to go into an environment where it's such long hours, is no social life, working with, you know, some old guys, some guys that have been around the block a few times in restaurants. And as much as the cooking skills, what they'd be teaching me is great, but some of the other things maybe not so good for a 16-year-old. But it's made me the man I am today. What I learned there, it literally has made me the man I am today. And I grew up so fast in that environment. But looking back, I had to get a scooter, drive that and back and forth late nights after working. My parents must have been worried so much. But
did you feel the whole time like, yeah, I've got this? And were you sort of thriving in that environment? Mm. Or were there times where you're like, maybe should have stayed in school?
Yeah. As soon as I went full time, I was so happy because I didn't like school at all. And I was in that environment that, you know, I knew that it was beneficial for my career. So I was learning constantly. But then, you know, you get thrown in the deep end in these restaurants, and I would be put on a section during a busy service, and I'd have the worst service of my life and think to myself, why on earth am I doing this? It's too tough. You know, there's a lot easier jobs out there where I don't have to stress, or I could go back to school and you don't have to worry about the sort of pressures that I had on me. And literally when you're cooking in professional kitchens and you're in the middle of a service, it feels literally like it's a life or death thing. It's such a high stress environment that even though it's just cooking, it feels like if you mess up, your whole world is going to collapse. And I remember this one time after a few years of being in the industry, just a silly thing that got to me so badly. I had some potato fondants prepared, ready for service, got them in the oven. Service came, first check came on order, and that was they needed the potato fondant for that. And the chef goes, Gaz, where's that chef, that potato fondant? And I went, oh, I can't say what I said. and I remember that they're still in the oven and they were black. And this was a most incredible restaurant I've ever worked at. And, you know, I literally felt like I let every chef down in that kitchen. I was, you're panicking about what's going to happen on TripAdvisor, on reviews and TripAdvisor. You're worried that that could have been a food critic, because then, you know, their meal is going to be delayed and it won't be to the best quality possible. It literally feels like life or death, but what a thrill service is. It's amazing. So I loved it. Yeah.
You alluded to it before, but, you know, working with some of these older guys that have been around the block, must have been a lot of banter in amongst it. And you see, we sometimes see, you know, chefs on TV, not all of them, but like yelling at the younger chefs and whatnot, because it is such a high pressure environment. What are these guys like when the kitchen closes?
Yeah.
Do they take on like a different persona? Or,
I guess that's, it goes to show that most of these people, chefs that I work with are still friends to this day. And you form, it's like a family. You spend so much time with each other every single day. You go through tough and fun and hard times, but it's a nice environment to be in. And if there's a bad egg in the group, I guess that, you know, that person won't be around that long, I guess. But, yeah. I think I learned how to swear a lot when I first went into the kitchens. Something that I've tried to cut down a lot recently, especially with YouTube, because you can't be seen swearing on there.
And I want to know a little bit more, I guess, about your personal lifestyle at this stage. So you were like, again, I'm presuming sort of 16 to 18 in the start of your sort of training at these restaurants. What were your other interests outside of cooking at this time in your life? Were you into fitness? Were you into music, art? What else were you sort of jumping into?
Unfortunately, with it being such a tough lifestyle, you don't get much social life. So the sporting days had gone. So I went from playing rugby twice a week, football once or twice a week, swimming five or six times a week, running, all that stuff I used to do regularly just went. So I was just in the kitchens constantly. And I think part of the reason why my time in professional kitchens wasn't as long as it should have been was because that whole, my exercise and healthy lifestyle went out the window almost. But I guess food and becoming the best chef possible was everything to me. So there was nothing going to stop me. And I guess it didn't bother me too much that I wasn't playing sport.
And I just want to clarify. So these first jobs that you had, they were traditional restaurants. So you were learning to cook with, you know, all sorts of ingredients, animal ingredients, vegetables, everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I learned literally everything, butchering. It's strange being vegan now and looking back to some of the stuff I've cooked and prepared and sort of feeling guilty for it. But if I hadn't have done those years learning the traditional way of cooking, I wouldn't be able to create the recipe and the recipes and the food that I do now. It's really, really helped me in terms of making sure I'm bringing out flavors in vegan recipes, adding bold flavors to what can be bland food.
I think that's really important because, you know, having cooked it and tasted these animal-based dishes, you know what it's going to take texture-wise and flavor-wise to replicate it, which is so important for people out there who are not plant-based or might be curious, but they're a little bit worried about moving away from those familiar dishes that they love.
Mm.
A great example, last night you cooked sriracha meatballs.
Mm.
And, you know, the texture was there, the flavor was there. These are easy ways for people to jump over and have a little bit of a dabble and go, oh, this vegan thing's not too bad.
Mm. Yeah, and that's why I create the recipes I do. I want to create recipes that encourage people to eat less meat, potentially go vegan. And I know that part of cooking is obviously flavor, but texture is really important as well. And going from a meat-heavy diet to a vegan diet, you need to make sure that you're getting many different textures and flavors into dishes, sweet, sour, spicy, umami flavors, and very important, and then crispy, soft, smooth, all those type of textures that you need to create a complete dish. Fortunately, when I made those sriracha meatballs yesterday, didn't have half the amount of equipment I had. But,
and the ingredients were right?
But we went with it, and it was great doing my first actual public demo in a place like Bali.
I feel very privileged to have sat in front of you for the first time, because I'm sure you're going to be doing so many of those in the future. Yeah. Talk us through the sriracha meatballs. We're going off track here a little bit, but I'm sure the listeners will want a quick snapshot. I know it's in your cookbook, which we're going to talk about. What are the main ingredients in the sriracha meatballs?
So sriracha meatballs, someone asked me to create meatballs on my YouTube channel. Didn't want to do a traditional Italian style meatballs. Nothing wrong with them. I just wanted to do something different. I seen a meme on Instagram saying that sriracha was life for vegans. You know, it's that got that umami, sweet, spicy flavor. And I seen a meme that people were putting it on everything, like bread and potatoes, just everything. So I thought, right, let's make some sticky, sweet sriracha meatballs. And then I wanted to show people how to make tofu exciting and not bland, and just jazz it up a little bit. So I decided to make some sriracha meatballs. We mash this firm tofu up, get some garlic, some spring onion, some chili, some sriracha, some maple, sesame oil. All those flavors are amazing together. And then we get them nice and crisp in a pan. Obviously, form them into balls first. Get them nice and crisp in a pan into the oven. And if you have firm tofu and you've squeezed all the water out and you do have an oven, which I didn't have yesterday, you'll have a really firm, nice textured meatball. And you get a beautiful glaze with sriracha. They are stunning. One of my favorites from my book, actually.
And just despite the equipment and the ingredients, they still taste bloody amazing. The pressing the tofu, how do you recommend people do that just to get most of the water out?
So you can get a actually tofu press, but what I tend to do at home, get a couple of clean kitchen towels and just squeeze it between the two, and it'll get rid of most of the water. Just if you're making something like that, make sure you get some really firm tofu. It's very important, extra firm. It's generally specified on the packet, so get that.
Okay. Back to your training. So you're working in these restaurants. How did that evolve? Did you jump around a few different restaurants, and where did your sort of transition towards, you know, looking at a plant-based lifestyle for yourself come in?
Yeah. So I spent a couple of years at the first hotel restaurant where I started. Actually, around 17 years old, I was running the kitchen often on certain nights, and that was an amazing feeling. So I knew I'd sort of learned as much as I could get out of that place, and there was a renowned restaurant in Cardiff called Le Galois, which was a French fine dining style restaurant with a really experienced chef in charge. And I turned that up one day just after a lunchtime service. I asked the waiter for the chef. I had my CV printed off, some pictures of my dishes, which looked probably terrible, but I took them along anyway. And I just said to the chef all my aspirations. I wanted to go to Paris. I wanted the Michelin star. I wanted to work for him. I was willing to work for free. So he said, right, come in this weekend and you can work for us. So I did that. I worked for free for 3 days, I think. And I must have impressed him, because a week later he took me on full time. And that is where the serious work started, and where I learned the majority of my skills. Some amazing food.
What sort of food were you creating there?
It was fine dining, fusion of modern cuisine with traditional French techniques. We were trying to get a Michelin star, so as you can imagine, the food was very out there. I remember plating up my food on the hot plate one day, and the chef whispering in my ear, winding me up, saying, "Gah, that's avant-garde, that's avant-garde." And that is literally how Avant-Garde Vegan came about, because when I was looking for a name for my Instagram, I didn't know what to choose. That just came into my head, and I looked on Instagram, no one had used it. So
And it works perfect.
I went with it.
You know, these pushing the boundary type recipes.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. It's sort of, I'm getting used to it now. I don't know whether I'm going to switch it up and just drop it and go to just keep it Gaz Oakley, but for now it's fine.
See how it plays out.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to your original question, sorry, I always go off on these tangents. I worked at several Cardiff restaurants for 4 years. Then I spent a year at La Galwa. It was tough, really, really tough at a young age when my friends were going off to university, meeting girls and having a social life. And I was just in the kitchens, just sweating like mad.
Did you still have your eyes on the Michelin star? Like, was that definitely. Like what was driving you to not be distracted and not have this sort of fear of missing out on all this socialization and stuff?
Yes, I definitely had it in my head the whole time and that's all I wanted to do. But I think when you get to the age of 18, 19, when your friends are like heading out, you want to do the same thing. I remember one sunny day, I was in the kitchens. We had a killer busy day. I was there from 8 a.m. till 12 at night. And during the day, I was thinking, oh, I would love to be kicking a ball about over the park. Just dreaming of that, literally just dream, just something so simple that, you know, someone in a normal 9-to-5 job could do, or just someone like my friends when they were 18, 19, they could just, you know, just go to the park. I just dreaming of doing that. But I was balls deep in potato fondants.
It was all well worth it.
But I left that job not really on good terms because I got burnt out so much that I had to leave the industry. Well, I had to leave that job. And I worked at some more Cardiff restaurants for a number of years after that. I moved around trying to learn as much as I could. But then I was offered a job at a company my dad worked for, which was just loading lorries. At a builder's merchant, and I decided to just give it a go for a few months just to recuperate, really, after working so many years in the kitchens, not exercising, not eating properly, not sleeping properly. It was tough on me at such a young age. So I went into this 9-to-5 job loading lorries, which was a huge career change. And I felt like a failure at first, to be honest with you. But what really appealed to me was the obviously half the amount of hours that I was doing, being able to earn more money and not having to sleep in my car during split shift was very, very appealing to me. So I went with it. And what I thought would be a 6 month sort of job just to recuperate turned into a few years where I actually worked up in this, my way up in this company. I try and turn everything I do into a positive and try and make it my own. So I went from loading lorries in this company to being a sales rep, traveling all around the UK and selling civil engineering materials, which was a huge change, I know, and very random, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed meeting people. And
where was your mindset at this time of your life? You said you felt like a failure. Was that because you'd worked so hard in the cooking and you had your eyes on the Michelin star and becoming the chef, and then you stepped aside and left that behind? Did you feel at this stage like that was going to be your past life, or was this a temporary job and you knew I'm going to go back to the chef industry, but I just need some time off. I've burnt out. I need to save some money.
Yeah. So I always had it in my head that I would go back into the catering trade, I'll say, because I didn't know what role I'd have, whether I would save for a few years and open my own restaurant, whether I would, I always had these business plans about starting a little deli or a little cafe, or then going back into professional kitchen, moving to London and getting a job there. I knew I'd go back into the catering industry because that was me. It was my personality. So when I went into this job where I couldn't express that personality, it felt horrible. I couldn't be myself in a way. So yeah, I always knew I'd go back into the cooking industry, and I did. And the reason it happened was with my spare time, I got back into sports. So I actually started weightlifting in the evenings after work, put on a lot of weight, a lot heavier than I am now. I was eating like a 5,000 calorie diet. I wanted to play rugby again. And everyone in Cardiff who plays rugby is absolutely huge. So I thought, right, I need to.
What were you eating? What were you eating to sort of bulk up?
Just meal prepping. So I'd have a huge amount of oats in the morning, maybe something like chicken and rice and veg around 12. Then around 3, I'd have some fish and some sweet potato and veg, gym, and then a huge meal in the evening and massive protein shake, and I'm really not proud of it.
Can you remember
disgusting stuff?
Can you remember how much exactly, how much, what were you weighing and how much weight did you put on?
I got to 14 stone. I don't know what that is in pounds or kilograms.
Kilograms, yeah.
Yeah, 14 stone and but, I'm 11 stone now.
So okay, wow.
It's a huge difference.
How did you feel physically? Like you're obviously putting on size and you no doubt probably looking good, but did you feel energetic? Did you feel up and about and like were you performing?
I really enjoyed the gym. I loved training so much that it was a way for me just to forget about things and just in that was my, being not being able to express my creativity or do something I enjoy in work. Going to the gym was my new thing to sort of, you know, keep me excited about stuff, I guess. So eating a 5,000 calorie diet, eating all that meat, dairy, fish, I felt quite run down. And knowing what I know now, knowing that our bodies aren't really supposed to eat that amount of food and especially meat and dairy, our bodies take a lot of, use a lot of energy to break it down. So no, I wasn't feeling very energetic at all, but because I love training so much, you know, I found it in me to get to the gym and work out. I enjoyed it. But after eating all that for a couple of years, it didn't have a good effect on my body. You know, I thought I looked quite good, but the feeling inside me, my stomach, I was having these stomach issues. Nothing too much to scream about in pain, but just something like a nagging sort of horrible feeling in my stomach. And every time I used to eat meat or fish, I felt guilty. And I don't know why I had that sudden switch of feeling guilty, but I just did. Maybe just because of the sheer volume that I was eating, I just thought this isn't right. And I remember actually putting on my Twitter, obviously a few years ago, saying that one day I'm going to be vegan. And I just had it in my head. I knew I would go vegan. And about literally only like 4 weeks later, I came across a video on, the way I found out about this video, there's a rapper called JME who's vegan. I'm a big fan of music. I'm a big fan of his. And he was on a radio show. He talked about how he went vegan. And he said he just watched one video and it made him go vegan overnight. And he posted the link on his Twitter. I saved it into my phone. And then 3 weeks after saving it into my phone, I watched it and went vegan overnight.
Did you wait 3 weeks because you knew as soon as I watched this, that's it?
Exactly. I think that I had to be in the right frame of mind. I think that I sort of been doing the whole training thing for a couple of years. You know, I wasn't that excited anymore. I got to a point where I was like, oh, okay, I'm quite big now. I haven't played rugby yet. I don't know. It's a bit weird in my head, but so I think because I'm really competitive, when I got to a size of 14 stone where I'm a lot bigger than I ever was, I just still wasn't happy. So I was like, when is this going to end? Like, when am
What's
I going
next?
To be, yeah. When will I be happy or what is next? So I just thought, right, this, I'm sick of feeling guilty about eating this food. I'm not enjoying it. I'm going to watch this video. And then I watched it. Wish I watched it sooner.
What was the video called?
So it's Gary Yourofsky, speech called The Best Speech Ever, I believe.
One of the great videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's got millions and millions of views.
I just think the way he explained things is just incredible. I've watched it several times since still just to refresh my head. And I just think what an amazing activist in the way he just delivers the facts really. And it just stuck so clearly in my head. And I knew that this was my new life. There was no way I could go back to eating meat, dairy and fish.
So tell me, you watched this. This is while you're still working in the lorries?
Not in the lorries. No? I actually had worked my way up in this company and I was a sales rep.
Okay. So working within that same company.
Yeah,
so you weren't a chef at this stage.
No.
You were eating very animal heavy based diet. Things must have changed pretty quickly. So overnight you changed what you were eating.
Mm.
That next day, were you like, okay, right, I need to work out what to eat. What did you think vegans ate before you made that change? And what resources did you use early on just so that Gaz could enjoy his food and eat it, you know, a variety of foods, not just eat lettuce like the majority of sort of non-vegans may think?
Yeah. So I remember watching, I remember having one of my meal preps, watching that video during one afternoon. And then after it, I was like, oh, I can't go and have that meal that's in the fridge now. I'm going to go to the supermarket. So I went to the supermarket. There's a supermarket in the UK called Sainsbury's. And even 3 years ago, although they didn't have like a lot of vegan convenience food that they do now, they would have like things like ready-made falafels, bean salad, hummus, all with the vegan logo on. And, you know, whereas I would never look for that prior to it, I was looking for it. And I just, because I was in a bit of a rush, I just bought everything that had a vegan label on it. And I had mixed bean salad, hummus, falafel, spinach. And it, although it's all shop-bought stuff, it was the most exciting, tasty, flavorsome thing I've had for like 2 years, because I just was so used to eating meal prep and stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, there's not much going on in the supermarkets. Let me start creating food of my own. And just started taking over my parents' kitchen.
What year was this?
I could. So I went vegan October. Oh, it's 3 years now. So it's October.
Awesome.
2015. So I just started going into my parents' kitchen and experimenting. I realized that there wasn't much in the supermarkets. I got my thrill of cooking again. Just got really excited by trying to veganize stuff. If I had certain things that I missed, I would just try and recreate them, which was really, really fun and exciting to do. Working with things like seitan, wheat gluten, trying to jazz up tofu, and then feeding it to my parents and them saying, oh yeah, we're not missing meat. And funnily enough, my mum is gone vegan now as well. My dad eats vegan 90% of the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's an amazing thing. And thank you. Well, I just appreciate them so much for letting me take over their kitchen and start experimenting.
And being open-minded to try new things.
Oh, definitely.
And,
definitely.
You know, to taste what you're experimenting with. Who at that stage, I mean, because the way I see it with everything that you've done on social media, and we spoke about it before, sort of recreating these familiar sort of meat style dishes, you were sort of at the forefront of that, I guess. So was there anyone else out there that you were able to get some inspiration from for these recipes, or were you just creating things based on your sort of chef skills and doing it from scratch?
Yeah. So first up, I just started cooking, experimenting just for myself, just because I wanted to eat nice things. I didn't want to miss anything. I knew that I could never go back to the diet I had before. I knew that I'd always be vegan. So I wanted to make that as exciting as possible for myself. And then friends and family and work colleagues especially were like, what the hell are you eating, Gaz? Like, why are you vegan? You must be missing so much stuff. So I decided to start taking pictures of everything I was eating and just put it on Instagram. And that was just a way for me to show my friends and colleagues and everyone what I was eating, because I got asked all the time. And that Instagram started off as an account called Go Vegan, which was G-O, my initials, and then vegan. It started growing in popularity really, really fast. And I then switched over to Avant Garde Vegan, so I wanted to make it more of a
brand.
More of a brand almost. And especially because people were requesting the recipes, there's people from all around the world following me. And I thought, right, this is something quite serious now.
So you were getting messages pretty much straight away going, you know, how do I make that?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're saying, who was I sort of inspired by? Who was I looking for? There wasn't really anyone at that time on social media, as far as I can remember, who was an ex-professional chef or was a professional chef using their skills to make tasty vegan recipes. So I guess why I had people asking me for the recipes, because they hadn't seen that type of food before.
So when you were getting these messages, was that sort of when you realized, okay, there's a demand for this, type of content? And how long did it take? I'm assuming at the start of that, you were still working your other job. How long did it take until you know, stepped aside from your role in sales at the company you were at to going full time into creating recipes and content online?
I guess I had Gary Yourofsky's speech fresh in my mind. After watching his video, there was other things that I checked out. And all I wanted to do, like every new vegan, is encourage people to go vegan and explain why you're vegan. And I was shocked by the horrors that I had been awoken to, really, you know, after watching the Gary Ofsted speech and other documentaries, that I wanted to encourage people to take up a vegan diet as well. So using the social media was my way of just sort of encouraging people, but letting food do the talking rather than me, you know, sort of preaching about it too much. I wanted to use the food to try and encourage people to go vegan. So that was the motivation behind the Instagram, as well as showing my friends what I was eating. But when it got more serious, it was a case of, yeah, let's try and encourage as many people to go vegan as possible. I took it more seriously. I got a proper camera and started taking better food pictures, spending more and more time in the kitchen and skiving off work. I can say this now because I've been out of the job for a few years. But I was a sales rep. I had, you know, I had a company car, and when I should have been at meetings, I wasn't. I was at home and I was in the kitchen making lovely food and taking pictures. And back then I was trying to upload a picture every day. So as you know, someone who makes content, you know, if you're going to be uploading something every day, you need to be working on it every day. So I didn't go to many meetings, and I was even less enthusiastic about that job after finding this new sort of hobby and
some fire in your belly.
Yeah. And just the whole thing of just encouraging people to go vegan is just what I wanted to do. That was my mission. So I actually reached 7,000 followers on Instagram and decided it was the time to quit my job. I thought, right, 7,000 followers, that is loads. That is so many.
I'm good to go.
Yeah. I had one person from America contact me. All right, I've made it. I'm gone.
And I need to ask, at that stage, you spoke about it before, the job at the Laurie's, and obviously working your way up into sales, you're being paid more than you were as a chef. Mm. Were you thinking, okay, if I'm going to jump into full-time content creation, I'm going to teach people how to make delicious plant-based recipes, how am I going to monetize this?
Mm. Yeah, I didn't think of that when I got the job. But again, I'm so lucky that my parents are so supportive. They were fully behind me. They saw that, you know, this Instagram thing, they didn't know what it was really, was taking off. And let me just go at it. If it fails, you know, I can always go back to that job. That was their sort of mentality. But I'm too competitive. I needed to make it work. So I started doing vegan festivals in Cardiff. So I remember quitting my job on like a Friday and then going to a vegan festival on the Saturday. And then the week later, I'd actually made a contact and I had my own stall. So a week after quitting my job, I had my own stall at a vegan festival. And I thought, wow, I can make some money. Obviously money's not the motivation, but you know, I needed it to survive and I needed money to invest into my content. So
what were you selling at the market?
So I couldn't do too much because obviously I was in my parents' kitchen. I started doing vegan cakes and donuts, really tasty stuff actually. And when I did donuts especially, they would fly off. I remember the first festival I did, I sold about 400 donuts, and that took me all day the day before. In my parents' kitchen, longer than all day. It was about 18
hours. Parents are in Cardiff, right?
Yeah.
Are there a lot of vegans in Cardiff, or were people sort of getting the train?
No, it's not a huge amount, but it's growing. It's a major city. It's the capital of Wales. So there is quite a lot of vegans. And actually that vegan festival, that was just under 3 years ago. It was really, really busy and I was surprised. So I was just happy that I could jump into something straight away. So doing that vegan festival straight away was a great feeling. Being able to make some money, being able to meet other vegans, being able to feed people and just spread the name. So I remember having on the store, follow at Avant-Garde Vegan back then, just meeting people, handing out cards and things. It was a really nice thing to do. And I encourage anyone who's starting a business, regardless of what it is, to do festivals and things like that, you know.
Feel the community.
Definitely, yeah. Start small, and then, you know, if you make a name for yourself in a small area, it's going to go to the next area. Then you can go nationwide and then worldwide, hopefully.
I'm glad that you've you know, spoken about that and told that story, because a lot of people would look at your YouTube and your Instagram and think, oh, wow, this guy's just overnight. Mm. But I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of work definitely. That's gone into that, making 400 donuts in your mum's kitchen.
Oh, well, that 400 turned into, people were really requesting them. So I did loads of vegan festivals, and it was really hard work. But the reason I had to keep doing it was because, and I did enjoy it, but the reason I kept doing it was because I got to a point on Instagram where I hit around 30,000 followers. The food pictures were getting much better and better. You know, I was getting better with the camera. I learned how to use the camera just from you watching YouTube videos.
What sort of camera were you using?
Canon 600D, I think.
And then doing like editing sort of through.
Yeah, small amounts of editing. Yeah. But because I had the food plating skills, it was just more of a case of being able to control the lighting and the backgrounds and things like that. But more and more people were asking for recipes, and I was toying around with maybe should I do my own book, but without any graphic design skills and a huge budget, I thought to myself, no, let's go over to YouTube. So I started my YouTube in December 2016 and just put out on Twitter, is there any videographers around that want to do some filming with me? And I looked at people like Jamie Oliver on YouTube and just saw how they film, and just very relaxed and just tasty recipes. But I'd been really inspired by watching cooking programs on at home all my life. So I thought, I want to emulate that. I want to make TV ready content on YouTube. I first started filming in December 2016, and I was so shy and awkward and stiff. And it's when they put the cameras on me, I realized, oh damn, yeah, I'm actually going to be on camera. I forgot about this. I forgot that I had to have a sort of personality and a presence. I just thought to myself, yeah, I'm just going to be cooking. But no, you have to interact with the audience almost. But it's hard when they're not there. You just have to talk to a lens. So I felt really awkward at first, and I didn't think I could do it. But I kept at it. Can't watch those videos now because they're so embarrassing. But I'm now eight seasons into my YouTube channel. It's over a year and a half old. And it's my biggest audience of over 500,000 subscribers. Wow. In less than 2 years.
So you've just each season felt more and more and more confident in front of the camera.
Definitely, yeah. And I really enjoy it now as well, which is fun. So I thought actually when I started that, I'd have to put on some sort of act, like an act, and be really confident and like a typical YouTuber or presenter or Jamie Oliver, you know, where he's really enthusiastic and loud, and that is just not me at all. So I just couldn't do it. And I just thought I'll just be my sort of quiet self and just chilled out really, I guess. And my audience is really taken to it, and I get some amazing comments, and I really love YouTube, and I'm so proud to be on it. And I upload a recipe video every Sunday. It's great. I'm always trying to up the level. So each season they get better and better, I think.
We'll have a direct link to the Avant-Garde YouTube channel in the show notes for anyone that wants to jump over. I highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Some mouth-watering stuff in there. And we're going to get into a few of the recipes when we talk about your book in a minute. But just interested in the evolution on Instagram and YouTube early on. So you got this new camera, you're at sort of 30-odd thousand followers, and then you got a film company on board. Did you have to start paying them initially, or were they doing it sort of in order to get their name out?
So the donuts cake food business wasn't as lucrative as as I thought. So I did get some credit cards, or a credit card, and that's how I initially paid for my crew to help me out. As I said, I'm so determined. I knew it's an investment. I had to make it work. I couldn't just switch on a camera in my parents' kitchen, because I've been really trying to make the food pictures as professional and as visually appealing as possible. I couldn't then just do a DIY recipe video on YouTube. So I had to invest into the crew. Luckily, we gelled, and although I wasn't very good on camera, we made it work. Unfortunately, I don't use that original crew anymore. I use another crew. It was a good start. And I'm really happy I invested in sort of professional crew, because I knew the food was good. I knew I had to get the cinematography good. because I wasn't very good myself on camera.
And were they filming still in your parents' house at the start?
Oh no. So that's another thing. Yeah, my parents' kitchen isn't the most sort of, if you remember, I said that I'm trying to create TV ready recipe videos. So I needed to hire a kitchen space to do these videos. And at first I just hired an Airbnb. I didn't even tell the owner that I was filming in it. I just hired an Airbnb with a nice kitchen. And I did that for the first three seasons of recipe videos.
I wonder if he's come across the YouTube channel.
Well, I'm not sure if the first one has, but then I moved to, for seasons two and three, I moved to another Airbnb and I told those because, you know, it actually grew quite fast for YouTube. So I had to tell them. But from season 4 to 8, I've started hiring proper professional sort of studios, which are made for filming. Eventually, one day, it's my dream to have my own studio. So I can just flip on a camera anytime and do something really nice. But for now, it's a trip to London with the crew, with all the ingredients, with all the gear. And that's how the videos sort of come together.
So you're actually still living in Cardiff?
Yes. I actually live out my suitcase really though, because I'm traveling here, then everywhere, which is a great thing to do. But my base is Cardiff. Yeah. Often in London.
Yeah. So after Bali, are you back home or are you straight off to America?
Yeah, so I'm sure we go on to the book, but I've just released a Christmas cookbook and I'm actually going on tour with it, which is an amazing feeling. All I want, I really do want to just travel in life. And I think travel is an amazing way to learn different cultures, learn different food. And because my 4 years in professional kitchens is almost like a dip in the ocean in comparison to a chef's career. Rather than me going back into that kitchen environment where I won't be able to have time to make my YouTube videos to do recipes or books and things like that. The way for me to keep learning is for me to travel and learn different things. So being able to work and travel is an amazing feeling. So yes, so from Bali, I'm flying to Montreal. I'm doing a vegan festival there. And then I'm going on a Canada and American tour with the book and doing talks and Q&As and book signings. It's an amazing feeling.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll post the whole schedule for any of the listeners, because this episode's going to go up next week. So if you're listening and you want to get along and see Gaz in person, definitely make some time and do that. So we'll have a list there of all these destinations and the times and whatnot. And you're running a competition, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to try and do a few giveaways along the way. This is coming out next week. Can I share the news that I... so I'm doing a big collaboration with a big UK chain restaurant, which I've been a fan of all my life. And they actually have a restaurant in New York. And prior to my book signing at Strand Bookstore, I'm going to do a little giveaway and take some of the people who are coming along to the signing for lunch beforehand. So if anyone's in New York, send me a message.
I think I've been to one of their restaurants. I'm privy to... I was at the cooking that Gaz did last night, so I know what this company is. But they've got one in London as well, right?
Yeah, they have loads.
Loads in London. Yeah. So yeah. We may have given it away there, but you can use your imagination.
It's Japanese.
Can we talk about the dish or part of the dish and the reason why they were sort of attracted to working with you?
Because
this is huge. This is a big deal.
It's huge for me because I'm probably going to give it away. Let me just see what when is this podcast coming out?
It'll be around the 13th of October.
I can tell you.
Here we go, guys. Here we go. Yes. It's an exclusive on the Plant Proof podcast. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's actually being announced around the 12th, 13th. So I'll go back to the start. So when I was about 8 or 9, my dad brought home a cookbook. And it was from a restaurant that I didn't really know too much about because it wasn't the size it is now. And it's called Wagamama's. And Wagamama's is a Japanese-inspired restaurant. And they make some amazing food. And inside that recipe book, there was a DVD. And it was a couple of chefs, the Wagamama executive chefs, basically cooking some of their famous dishes. And I just got really inspired by it. And unfortunately, at that time, Wagamama's wasn't as big as it is now. And they only had a couple of locations in London. And I just fell in love with it. I really loved Wagamama's. I didn't actually go to the restaurant because it was in London. I didn't go there that often, but I remember going on holiday to France one year and there was a kid playing around in the park and he was wearing a Wagamama's t-shirt and I was so jealous. I literally took a dislike to this guy because he was wearing a Wagamama t-shirt that I really, really wanted. That's how much of a fan of Wagamama's I was. A few years later, I managed to go to London with my family and go to Wagamama's and then I sort of fell in love with it. And it's been a sort of part of my sort of eating out experience from then until now. And they've got bigger and bigger and they have restaurants all over the UK and many in Cardiff. But when I went vegan, they didn't have a huge amount of offerings on their menu. You could veganize a couple of the dishes, but it wasn't very extensive. And in the last 2 years, they have created some incredible vegan dishes. There's a full vegan menu in there. They're really at the forefront in terms of chain restaurants in pushing vegan food, and they do it at an amazing level. And actually going inside their kitchen recently, I've understood how serious they're taking it, in the sense that all of their equipment that they use for the vegan dishes is, you know, is separate. Everything's sterilized. Everything is, anything that has is for vegan food is separate. So it's great to see. Anyway, I went to eat in their noodle lab in London, which is a restaurant where they test out new dishes. I posted a picture of one of the dishes on my Instagram and I messaged them. I basically said on Instagram, look, I've been a fan since I was a really young kid. I would love to work with you one day. And that was about a year ago. And our dish that we're doing together is going on the menu on the Noodle Lab, which is the restaurant where they test out their dishes, and in both Cardiff restaurants in my hometown, of course, for around four months or so. And the dish that I'm doing with them is obviously a collab dish. So there's inspiration that they've put in and mine as well. But what takes this dish to the next level is the fact that there's actually a vegan egg on the dish. And I came up with that recipe about 6 months ago when someone asked me to create a ramen on my YouTube channel. I didn't want to just do a standard simple ramen because there's lots of them on YouTube. I wanted to push it out there. So as well as coating tofu into miso glaze with sesame, I decided to make a vegan egg. And I had this egg mold that I use for chocolate Easter eggs for an Instagram picture a while back. My mum likes chocolate, so I made her some. And I had that lying around, and I have this panna cotta recipe that is that uses coconut cream, the really nice creaminess of that, set with corn flour to create a panna cotta, which is beautiful. So I sort of tinkered with that recipe to make it savory. I put miso in the coconut milk. I put lemongrass in there. And I set it with corn flour in this egg tray. And
so that's to create the
sort of egg white.
The egg white part, yeah. Yep.
And then I scooped the center out with a melon baller once it was set and filled it with some sriracha mayo. And it created the most incredible vegan egg you'll ever taste. And I served it on my YouTube channel and that video went pretty viral, over a few hundred thousand views, which is great. And they must have seen that and thought, right, there's an opportunity there to create something fantastic. And I just think that wanting to take that sort of leap to create a dish like that, which could be quite controversial in a way, why on earth are these vegans creating vegan eggs? This is a question I get all the time. And the answer to that really is when you're a meat eater for over 20 plus years, you become meat, dairy, egg eater, you know, for over 20 years, you become accustomed to those flavors and you're not just going to automatically switch off them. You still like those flavors. And that's why I create these meat replacements or egg replacements. You know, it's in my head to show non-vegans that you can still get the same flavors and tastes and textures and look to food when you're vegan as you would when you weren't. So, just made in a cruelty-free way. And to be honest with you, actually, with that vegan egg, I wasn't a huge fan of eggs beforehand, so I didn't want it to taste too much like an egg, although I could have put some black salt in there and that would have made it taste eggy. But for this dish that I'm doing with them, it's just a flavor sensation. We got that creaminess of the coconut milk, we've got the miso paste, we've got sriracha mayo in there, and it just goes beautifully with the dish. And I'm not going to give too much more information about the dish, but I advise anyone, if you're in London or Cardiff, October the 15th onwards, that dish is on the menu and it's going to be on there for around 4 months. And if it does really well, they're going to put it in every Wagamama restaurant around.
Get in there and eat it, because I'm not going to get over there until about 7 or 8 months. So I want that to still be on the menu, guys.
I hope it is. And I'll show you a picture of it now.
I've seen the video.
Well, of the dish that we're doing with them. Yeah. So obviously I can say it now. We've got some, unless you've got live on there. We've got some barbecue glazed seitan. It's like a donburi bowl. So we've got some sticky rice. We've got some raw elements. We've got some edamames. We've got the vegan egg. Oh, it's just a beautiful, beautiful dish. And I can't wait for people to see that and taste it. It's very me. And in a chain like Wagamama's, which is on every corner of every street in the UK, it's just amazing. Well, every city center corner of the street, yeah.
I spoke recently with Damien Clarkson from Vivolution. You may have heard of him.
Yeah, it's a lovely guy.
And we chatted about big corporate companies or big food companies like McDonald's and Hungry Jack's and even Wagamama now. Like, I've just had a look; they've got 140 restaurants around the world, so they're getting there. They're a sizable company.
Yeah.
And being able to support them, because any move towards having plant-based dishes on their menu is such an incredible thing.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that they also have animal products in their menu, that they need to be supported by the vegan community in order to see the sales, because they're driven by data, and to continue to want to add more vegan options to their menu and bring these types of people into their restaurant.
Yeah.
So I think this dish is going to go bananas.
I hope
for Wagamama. So, and I need to try it. So I'm hoping it's still on the menu when I get there.
Definitely. I really hope it is. I'm sure it's going to be successful. So I fingers crossed.
Otherwise, I'm coming to Cardiff. And
yeah, I'll make it. Come in one of my YouTube videos and I'll make it. But yeah, going back to the chain restaurants, I think that the only way veganism is going to become more mainstream is by making it more convenient. And what people know and what people are used to is going out to a high street restaurant and being able to eat like they would do if they weren't vegan. You know, we need to have that offering there. So as much as I wouldn't ever collaborate with someone like McDonald's, the reason I've collaborated with Wagamama's, and I think they're so different, but in terms of size, you're right, they've got 144 restaurants around the world, which is a lot less than someone like McDonald's, but they're a huge chain. The reason why I'm so keen to work with them is because I've been a fan of them for so long. And also, as I said, in the last 2 years, the way they have pushed veganism on their menus, you can't go into a Wagamama's without them asking you when you step in there, do you want a vegan menu? That is something they are all trained to ask. So they push it big time. And I fully believe that they'll have vegan Wagamama's soon. That's not something they told me. I just think they will go down that route.
Sounds like the perfect collaboration.
Yeah, definitely. It is. Yeah, such a big fan.
So tell us about what else is sort of on the horizon for you. We alluded to the fact you've got 2 cookbooks. Can you walk us through the cookbooks, and were you contacted by a publisher? Did you start pulling all your recipes together and go and find an agent, or what was the process like in order for that to come to fruition?
Yeah, so it was around 15,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is still fairly early days, but the Instagram was going really well. I think around 90,000 people were following me on there, and it was growing so, so fast. A lot faster than it is actually nowadays. And it's because, as I said to you before, I was uploading daily then, and that was hard work. But to get a good following, you need to do that. I was approached by an agent via email. This agent is now my agent. Her name's Zoe. She's amazing and really supportive. And she worked for someone called United Agents. And I didn't know who they were. They could have been anyone. I thought it was a joke email, actually. She just emailed me saying, are you interested in writing a cookbook? And obviously I was. I'd been writing my recipes down for a long time with the thoughts of making a book. I have an actor friend who said to me, you do realize who United Agents are, don't you? And I said, no. They're like, that's like the biggest agency in the UK. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, I need to take this more seriously. So I went to London and met with her, and we had a few meetings with publishers. And again, I went into these meetings with the publishers, and I didn't know what to expect. I just said, oh, to be honest with you, I'm an ex-chef. I, I really love cooking and I've got this idea for a book. And it turned into a sort of a bidding war almost between publishers, which is just really surreal. And I signed my book deal for my first book, Vegan 100, which came out in January.
And who's the publisher?
Publisher called Quadro, which are Australian, actually. Hardy Grant.
The main. They're huge, yeah.
Yeah, so Hardy Grant is the main publisher. This is one of their sort of smaller, I don't know how they describe it, but yeah, they're part of Hardy
Grant. Yeah, because I think, well, your book in Australia, does it have the Hardy Grant logo on it?
Yes,
yeah, it does.
It would do.
Yeah, there you go.
I need to get to Australia.
You do. We're going to talk about that later.
Yeah. So Vegan 100 came out in January and it was a collection of my recipes that I created from the first day I went vegan up until I finished writing that book, basically. It was all the things that I sort of wished I had knew how to make or before I went vegan. So sort of the stuff that, you know, after a couple of months of being vegan, I missed hot dogs or chorizo. I created vegan chorizo and then that recipe's in the book. So it's all the stuff that I sort of, I wish I had when I first went vegan. And it's just, there's a recipe in there for everyone. There's lots of gluten-free recipes. There's some raw recipes. There's flavors that I'm inspired by from all around the world. We've got Caribbean curries and things like that. So I'm really proud of that book and it's done great. I think it's been translated into 5 languages and just, it's really nice. Seeing your name on a book is a nice feeling.
Is your, the pumpkin roast that you did a while ago, was that on YouTube or was that in the book as well?
Was it the Christmas?
Yeah, the Christmas roast.
That's actually in my Christmas.
That's in the Christmas one. Okay, so my girlfriend cooked that. Oh. You must have released that just before last Christmas?
Yeah.
And God, everyone loved it.
Oh, good.
It was so good.
So that recipe just came about because someone asked me for an oil-free Christmas recipe, gluten-free as well. And I just thought, oh, I've got a massive squash in my house. Let's just stuff it with a load of things. And it turned into something really amazing. And that's actually coming up with that recipe, coming up with the other Christmas centerpiece recipe that I did for my YouTube channel last Christmas was how I sort of thought to myself, right, I could make a mini Christmas book here. And I asked my agent last Christmas before even Vegan 100 had come out. I said to her, what's the chance of Quadro being interested in me creating a Christmas book? Because I think it's going to help a huge amount of people around Christmas time. Whether you're that awkward vegan going to a non-vegan family's house and they don't know what to cook for you, this book is perfect for that family making food for you. Or it's a vegan family who want to sort of create something new rather than going out and getting a tofurkey. They can make something of their own and spend a bit more time in the kitchen and enjoy themselves. And I think Christmas is a time for everyone to be peaceful, really. So if we get more animals off the table and more people eating a vegan, peaceful diet, cruelty-free diet, I think it's all the better. So that's why I did that book. And the book actually turned from a mini book to over 70 recipes. So it's a good book. There's a lot of recipes in there. Very, very indulgent. I think the next book I'll do, if I do one, it's going to be something a lot simpler and a lot much more healthier.
Tell us about some of the feedback that you get from people who try your recipes and cook them. It must feel great to know that you're playing such an enormous role in people moving away from animal products, moving to plant-based recipes, but really, really enjoying them.
Yeah. Actually, at the demo last night, had a lovely couple from Australia. They came over to me and said that they'd been fans for a while. And before vegan, she used to love cooking programs, a professional chef showing some insights into what they'd learned in the kitchens and then just putting it in a format that you can make in your kitchen at home. And she said when she went vegan, there was nothing on TV like that for her. And then they found my YouTube channel and they got the same sort of the same feeling. They saw a cinematic recipe video using professional skills to make tasty dishes. So I get lovely comments like that. But in terms of me being able to help people with my recipes, as I said before, we're not all lucky enough to be vegan all our lives. Like I was a meat eater for 20 years. You're going to miss flavors. And I want to be that person that's going to help people get those flavors and textures that they used to enjoy, but obviously only vegan.
So with regards to the feedback that you've got, you know, so far from hundreds of thousands of people, what are the sort of overwhelmingly the most popular recipes that you've done that are in the cookbooks?
For me or for my audience?
For your audience. So what are people really, really loving the most?
Ooh, good question. So I think it's for me, choosing between my recipes is like choosing between kids, I guess, as I love them all. But I think one of the most recreated dishes in Vegan 100 is the sriracha meatballs, the coconut, Caribbean coconut stew, the Mexican burgers. Got some beautiful quarter pounders, my famous pea soup, which was a special that I did at Le Galois, one of the restaurants I worked at. So there's some really nice ones in there. And in the Christmas book, although it's only just come out, a recipe that went down hugely well on my YouTube channel was my seitan vegan ribs. And I've actually tweaked the recipe quite a lot for the book, and I've made it Christmas inspired by in the barbecue sauce, putting some cranberry in there. Ah, they are so, so good. And it's in the party food section of the book. I think that's going to go down really well. Yeah, I think that one is one of the most popular.
Mouth-watering stuff. I'll definitely be getting a copy of the Christmas book.
I should have brought you one, but unfortunately my luggage was already 30 kilograms because I'm going on tour. So I couldn't bring any books with me.
I'll jump on Amazon. They're on Amazon, right?
Yes.
I'll jump over onto Amazon and grab a copy. But I think it's important, like you said before, you know, this Christmas book could, you know, it will have such a big impact because it is a time where often vegans or people that eat a plant-based diet feel a little left out or a little lost. Mm. You know, they're like, everyone wants to enjoy those kind of indulgent, typical Christmas meals.
And, definitely.
So, you know, thank you for bringing out that book.
No, it's been a great, actually, year. It's been like Christmas all year round, which is quite a nice feeling, but sometimes strange. Shooting the pictures at the beginning of summer when it's boiling hot in the UK and I'm making Christmas pudding. It's quite a weird feeling, but I'm really proud of that book and I hope people get it and have a nice cruelty-free Christmas.
So you've got these two books out now. You just mentioned then that, you know, perhaps or hopefully there's more books to come. What else is on the horizon? You said early on you have your eyes set on a Michelin star restaurant. When can we expect Gaz Oakley to set up a physical restaurant that people can fly to from all over the world and experience firsthand your dishes?
That's been a dream of mine since I was a kid, having my own restaurant. Originally, it was, yes, getting a restaurant that would have a Michelin star. That is not so important to me anymore. I just want to feed as many people as I can and spread veganism as far and wide as possible. And having a Michelin star would put quite a few boundaries on the type of restaurant that I would do. So potentially that would be a passion project further down the line. But I've said on my YouTube channel that when I reach 1 million subscribers, I will announce where my first restaurant will be. And that's something I plan on sticking to. I really feel that when I do hit that mark on YouTube, I'll be in a position where I'll be sort of feel like I've conquered YouTube. I would have built a sort of audience that is waiting for my restaurant. That's what I want to do. I will know my audience, so I'll know what type of food to do and I'll get a sort of feeling for where they are in the world, so I'll know which position to put the restaurant in or in the world.
So if you're listening and you're from Bondi, subscribe.
Is it sunny there?
It's sunny. It's sunny. It's a very, very nice climate in Bondi. Yeah. So we'll have to get you over and make you fall in love with it
so that the
first restaurant's in Sydney. But somehow I feel like the first restaurant may well be in London or somewhere in the UK.
So I don't really feel too settled, actually. As I said, I'm sort of living out of a suitcase. I really want to find somewhere where I want to live, you know, and I really want to live in a hot climate. So potentially if I find somewhere on this tour, if I ever go to Australia, I'll find somewhere. If it's before I reach 1 million subscribers, then it could very well be outside of London or the UK. However, in the now, people are still able to taste my food. Obviously, I'm doing that Wagamama's live. I'm doing that collaboration.
We won't post this one.
No, that's all right. So I'm doing that collaboration. And also, I've just become executive chef of a restaurant in London called Virga. It's a vegan burger restaurant who make beautiful burgers. And I've just become the executive chef a few months back, and I'm starting to put my sort of my flair into their menu. Yeah, so I've just designed a brunch menu for them, and really, really tasty brunch menu, actually. So you can taste that every Saturday and Sunday in London. And then I'm going to go through their current menu and sort of jazz up their burgers where I can. But they are actually amazing already. So do what I can to that. So I plan on doing more collaborations like that. So basically more people can have my food prior to me opening my restaurant. And I also want to do pop-up restaurants every now and then, because it's nice getting the Chef Whites back on and doing some proper services.
Well, I know a lot of plant-based restaurants in Australia. So if that's what it's going to take to get a few of your meals into Australia, then
I'd love to.
Something we can talk about.
Actually, this is something that I always wonder about, because I've got a big audience in Australia. I've got a big audience in America. But these collaborations that I'm doing with the likes of Virga, the other one, are all sort of UK based. And I really want Australian or American or Canadian or wherever else in the world to contact me and say, look, I want to do a collaboration with you guys. Can you come here and do a special dish? That would be a dream. Not only because I'd be able to get to travel, but also for my audience that are in that location to be able to try it. Because I know what it's like in the sense of growing up outside of London in Cardiff, where you have to travel to London to get that new thing, whether that's go to a new restaurant or there's a specific event that it's always London, everything's sort of happening in London. So I want to try and branch out. I want to go elsewhere. And that is another thing in my head as well. I also want to do something in my hometown of Cardiff. So I recently done a collab there with a vegan bakery. We did some special vegan donuts, which were amazing, for a month. So I'm going to try and do things outside of London where possible, because everything I seem to be doing is outside of in London at the moment.
Well, I saw your burger. You uploaded a burger on your Instagram about a week or two ago.
Yes. So actually there's a brand in the UK, very famous brand called Linda McCartney Foods. You may well know them. Linda McCartney Foods are an established brand, obviously started by Linda McCartney, Paul McCartney's late wife. And she started that brand, I think 30 years ago. And they've been at the sort of forefront of vegetarian and vegan foods. And they've really helped people when they're transitioning to a vegan or vegetarian diet. Oh, that one, you're showing me the picture now. But anyway, so I'm going off on the tangent. Anyway, I did a collaboration with Linda McCartney. I did some special vegan burgers for them, or using their vegan burgers, created a lovely recipe. And we toured around some the universities in the UK. And just we gave out free burgers to just students walking down the street. It was amazing. So we had like hundreds and hundreds of meat eaters queuing up outside, not knowing they're getting a vegan burger. I just made sure it was so flavorsome that regardless if you're vegan or not, you're going to find this burger so tasty. And I think that type of activism is absolutely amazing. Just letting food do the talking, and where they can taste it was amazing. But actually that picture you just showed me, that was a recipe from my book that I actually put on YouTube. Some Mexican burgers, really, really tasty. I'm actually making those in Canggu next week at the Vegan Festival. So you can, if you're there, you can taste them. Well, you're not going to be there, are you?
No, I will have left Bali by then.
I'll have to get you on my YouTube channel soon.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is my girlfriend has a plant-based restaurant in Bondi called Conscious Feast, which is, you know, she set it up about a year ago, but it's super popular. It's the only plant-based restaurant pretty much. Yeah, it's the only 100% plant-based. Maybe there's one more now in Bondi. But burgers are the most popular thing on the menu. Mm. So we need to talk about that.
When can I book my tickets?
we will be making it happen. But I'm sure of it.
I'm actually a really big fan of burgers. And I remember that, you know, it's one of those nice entry foods into veganism. And a good vegan, you can tell a good restaurant by their burger. A vegan restaurant, sorry, by their burger. If the burger's mushy, if the burger's under seasoned, then the rest of the food can't be that good. Because if you can't make a good vegan burger, there's not too much hope for the rest of the dishes. I love making vegan burgers. I really do.
So last night you did the live workshop. And it was your first one that you've done in front of an audience, which you did an incredible job. And you know, you said before that you like to just be yourself and not jump into a character. And I think you absolutely nailed that. It was a very real and raw and authentic workshop, which I think everyone would have really loved. How do you feel going into something like that and speaking in front of people? Do you get butterflies? Do you get nervous? How do you cope with having 500,000 YouTube subscribers and all these Instagram followers and, you know, probably getting around London and people coming up to you? Do you like that attention?
So in terms of the public speaking side of things, when Vegan 100 came out, the publisher tried to get me doing loads of these sort of public cooking demos, and I was just so petrified, could not do it. So I turned them down, I made excuses that I couldn't be there. And more recently, I've been doing more of these public speaking events. I've done I got eased into it in a way that I did Q&As. So I was for my book promotion, and that eased me into public speaking. And I sort of felt like I did the first time I started filming for my YouTube channel, like, wow, this is weird. I'm feeling really nervous. That was my first public cooking demo yesterday, but I did a very small one in London a few months back. And I did a Facebook Live. Although I was just talking to cameras, it was an unfamiliar crew. There was three cameras, and knowing that there was going to be thousands of people watching me live was really daunting. So I'm not too confident. So I remember one of the assistants on the set said, we're having some Prosecco if you want some, or some vegan wine of some sort. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, I don't really drink, but I was like, I think I'm going to need this. So I drank it. And then 2 days later, then I had another sort of intimate cooking demo with about 5 or 10 people that I did. But this time it was 8 a.m. in the morning, and the 10 people there were making me really nervous. And I was thinking, oh, this is a bit early to have that little tipple before doing this. But I was looking for that bottle of wine, but I didn't do it, luckily. But doing things like that, every time I do it, I feel like I've conquered it, and I feel more and more confident. I think I find it easier and easier. So although yesterday I was really nervous, especially turning up and realizing that I didn't have all the ingredients or the equipment, I was quite nervous. I had a couple of the local beers here.
Bintang.
I had a couple of those.
Just to take the edge off it.
Calmed me down a little bit. But what a lovely audience. It was so nice. And what I try and do is try to make myself feel more comfortable is just by asking the audience, ask me questions. And it was a really nice night. I really, really enjoyed it. But in terms of the audience on social media, and for a long time without doing these sort of public events, it was just sort of a number on a screen. I saw the nice comments and things and everything. It was really a nice feeling, but I didn't really have that public interaction. But now, as you say, whether I go around London or go to a vegan festival somewhere, I actually went to New York a couple of months back, and people coming over to me in the street, it's the most strange feeling ever. I literally get very anxious, especially going to like a vegan festival, but I'm getting more used to it, because whenever someone comes up to me, they're only saying like really nice things about how I've helped them. So I feel so grateful and lucky to be in this position and hearing their sort of experiences with my recipes or the motivation that they give me. It does just really motivate me to keep doing it. So yeah, it's nice.
And what I like about what you're doing, and I guess the way you're doing it, is, and we spoke about it before, your content's not confronting, you know, like veganism confronting type of message. It's very digestible. It's very approachable. It's very cool. Like, there's a lot of style to what you do. So I'm assuming that there's not a lot of negative feedback. Like, you know, some activists and people who have a very, very sort of strong or in your face type message probably cop a little bit more heat. Do you get any of these sort of trolls or people on social media that do write anything negative? And if you do, does it affect you mentally, or how do you handle that?
Yes, like you say, I try and let the food do the talking. I try and make veganism look cool, whether that's me teaming up with, a clothing brand, for example, and just try and make it more mainstream, appealing to the general sort of maybe 16 to 30-year-old that is, you know, similar to me. So I try and make it appealing. And I know that I'm not the most articulate person in the way I talk. So food is my language, and it's the way I express myself. So I try and do it in a sort of unconfrontational way, as you say. And then in terms of trolls and things like that, I get, for every bad comment, I probably get about 50 to 100 nice ones, which is really good. And the bad ones are generally just people saying stuff like, what on earth are you doing? You're a vegan. You say you eat. Why are you eating this meat replacement? Something like that. Or just like really like childish stuff. If you're feeling down at any time, like we all do, and you read some of these bad comments, then it's obviously going to affect you a little bit. But a second later, I've gone to the gym or gone for a run and I've forgotten about it. So it's nothing to worry about. And I know what I'm doing is a good thing, and I'm just going to not let any sort of hates or anything like that put me off.
It's a great approach.
Thank you.
The recipe creation. I know there may be a few people listening who are sort of aspiring chefs, or perhaps they're a chef that, like yourself, has that traditional experience with animal products in kitchens and in restaurants, but they're either plant curious or maybe they've transitioned themselves and they're like, well, what do I do? What does that recipe creation process look like for you from scratch? And do you have any advice for any chefs that are coming up through the ranks or young kids that want to be a plant-based chef?
Yeah. Well, for me, the recipe creation process is, it depends what type of recipe I'm making, but like most chefs, if we go to a market or to the supermarket and we see some new produce and that's just come into season, you're inspired by that and you take it home and you'll cook something nice with it and you just experiment. So that's how recipes come along quite often. That's a very nice organic way. More so now, I'm getting feedback on my YouTube channel what people would like me to veganize. So that's something where I put my mind to remembering the flavors and trying to create a vegan alternative, which is always fun. And you get really, get proper excited when I crack a recipe like that. Or as I said to you before, travel is something that I really want to do. And if I have a dish where I'm traveling or I've watched a documentary in a certain part of the world and I see something that's not necessarily vegan, I want to try and veganize that. I do. Got a beautiful taco dish coming on my YouTube channel in a few weeks that I actually saw a documentary on YouTube. It was Mark Wines, I believe his name is. He went to Mexico and had all these tacos and he had a fish taco and I really wanted it. It looked amazing. So I veganized it. I made it with jackfruit and they didn't give the recipe away, but I just sort of figured out what potentially could go into it. I put Mexican flavors into the jackfruit, stuffed it inside a pepper, battered it. Oh God, makes me a little excited.
It's getting towards lunchtime and it's making me hungry.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I just day-to-day stuff. Like I know that as soon as I get into a kitchen, now I'm going to make a rendang or I'm going to make a nasi goreng that I've just been eating here or, you know, veganized versions here. I'm going to put my twist on it. You know, I just get excited by stuff like that. And for advice is to chefs wanting to create their own recipes or budding cooks at home, just experiment. Use recipes. Maybe use recipes as a guide. If you like a flavor and that flavor isn't in a recipe that you have in front of you, just add it and see what happens. Like there shouldn't be rules in cooking. And I always say this to people on my YouTube channel. If you don't have one of these ingredients, leave it out. Add some more of something else.
Get creative.
Yeah, just be creative. And I remember going to Virga, the restaurant that I'm now executive chef for, and we were in their kitchen going through their menu and one of their chefs was making a batch of burgers. And I said, can you just leave me some of these ingredients there? Didn't weigh anything out at all. I just put it all in. And the owners of Virga were watching me, probably thinking they were just like looking at me quite strange, but I was just getting my hands involved. I was putting all these different things. I was saying, can I have a tablespoon of this, a tablespoon of that? And I created this burger that was so unbelievably tasty that is now going on their menu and it's going to replace their classic burger. It's going to be the new classic burger. And that is just from me sort of freestyling it. I guess that most people may not have that sort of creativity, but I guess I wasn't born with that. I can't have been born with a cooking
like
sense.
An intuition.
I can't be. So it's just something I've learned. So I think the more time you spend in the kitchen experimenting, the more you're going to understand about flavors and what matches with what.
And if kids, I know you have gone, you know, straight from school into working environment, there are other people who may be looking at culinary schools or whatnot. And you spoke about having no rules. Do you think, is it important to go to culinary schools, or is the most important thing just to get in amongst it and get firsthand experience?
Yeah. For me, I think that, as I said at the start of the podcast, it's a case of I learned so much in that week's work experience. I learned more than I had done in cooking in school. So for me, I like to learn on the job, and I like to go from place to place and learn from different people. I think that's a great way of learning. I think that's what people should do in any field, is learn from different people on the job if possible. However, in the cooking industry, you need to be deadly serious if you're going to be going into those kitchens, because you know, you're going to be working some long hours. So potentially culinary school is something that, if it was available for me when I was in school, I potentially would have done that looking back. But if I did it, I may not be where I am today. I think it's good to being a slightly wiser now. I know I'm only 26, but being slightly wiser, you know, you need to choose happiness and live your life rather than being working so much. So, yeah.
One of the things that we kind of glossed over in terms of, you know, what might be on the horizon for you, and you mentioned at the start that a lot of your early inspirations were from Gordon Ramsay or from Jamie Oliver, and you were watching these cooking shows. Could we see you on TV in the future? Do you think you'll ever have your own cooking show on? I'm not sure if ITV has cooking shows, but on the main sort of stations across UK and globally.
So my dreams really is the book, then that, the restaurant, and TV, because I've grown up watching cooking programs. I've had lots of meetings with TV production companies in the UK. Nothing seems to go anywhere. It's a lot, from my brief understanding, it seems quite disjointed in terms of, say, for example, the BBC or ITV won't make their own, they won't have their own crews. They pay a production company or they use a production company who would pitch an idea to ITV to make the show. So I'm having various talks. I'd love to get on TV, but I just want a vegan cooking show or vegan show on the mainstream TV, just because it needs to be there now. If it's me or another vegan chef, I'm going to be happy.
The difference it can make.
Exactly. Yeah. We need to get veganism in the mainstream. It's going that way. And there needs to be, especially in the UK, there needs to be something like that. And I'm so frustrated with it, actually. You see the same faces on these cooking shows in the UK, and even like I wouldn't put it past these TV shows to one day announce that, for example, Jamie Oliver is going to come out with a vegan series. And as much as that is great for the scene, I think it needs, if they're going to do that, they need to get a vegan chef doing it, or an actual vegan to be doing it. But I think these TV production companies and channels are too scared to take a risk on new talent, someone who hasn't been on TV before, which is such a shame. However, YouTube is the new TV in my eyes. So if I can make my own show on YouTube, which I have done, and keep going with that, you'll find me there for as long as possible.
So. And you're building quite the resume on there. So, man, I'm sure one of those TV stations and production companies will be knocking on your door in the not too distant future.
Thank you.
Funny you mentioned Jamie Oliver, Gordon Ramsay. Theoretical question here. If one of them was to move to a plant-based lifestyle, which one of those do you think would be more inclined to do so?
Question. They both sort of flirted with it, haven't they? And constantly see big pages posting that quote that Jamie Oliver made like 3 years ago, saying that he thinks plant-based diet is the future, he needs to put his money where his mouth is and, you know, put more offerings in his restaurants, which I see he does do now and then. But you can't go saying that then, you know, be promoting meat, fish and dairy so blatantly by cooking. However, I am, I appreciate his work and Gordon Ramsay's work, because they have built such an empire, and they were very inspirational to me before going vegan, and especially Jamie Oliver. He's done a lot for healthy eating and things like that. I hope that happens. It would be amazing if one of them was to go vegan and do something like that. I can't see it happening because these guys have empires and business empires. If they went vegan, I think
they're heavily invested.
It's a lot of money for them. And it's just a shame. And, you know, potentially if they watch something like Dominion or Earthlings or something like that, they would go vegan, I reckon. I can't see how someone could watch that and not go vegan. But maybe they're not watching it, and if you're in the food industry, surely you know the ins and outs of a vegan diet and why it's beneficial. So I think maybe they're avoiding it because of businesses. I don't know, but fingers crossed one day someone like that will go vegan and will have a huge impact on their audience.
Completely agree. Yeah. You mentioned Virga, a couple other places in London. What are your favorite restaurants to go out and dine at, whether it's in London or Cardiff or anywhere in the world? If you were going to say your sort of top two or three restaurants that you've been to, could be, you know, standard sort of cafe, breakfast places, or it could be fine dining.
Okay, good question. So what I like about dining out is because I make nice food at home, and when I dine out, I want to be blown away. And unfortunately, being any chef, when they go out, you're always quite critical. And it's just because it's what you do. It's you know what you like. We know how to season things properly. I haven't been hugely blown away by many vegan restaurants so far, but there are some great ones out there. And my idea of a restaurant is proper dining. So I want to sit down for 2.5 hours. I want to have wine and enjoy my night and
just quietly
take a date there.
I think when you walk into a restaurant, I think some of the fellas in the kitchen could be sweating bullets. They could be a little nervous.
No, I don't know. I've probably been a bit too critical, but I've never had a bad meal in places. But what I'm saying is that I like, especially in London, there's not too much of a proper sit down dining restaurant. It's quite more fast food style. So my idea of a beautiful restaurant is going to sit down for a long period of time and having a 5-course meal. And I went to LA and went to Crossroads in LA. That was very similar to that. It was a nice traditional looking restaurant with some tasty food. So that was great. I think there's another vegan restaurant in LA, Matthew Kenny, I think, Plant Food and Wine.
I've been there, yeah.
Another beautiful setting.
He's doing some great things, Matthew.
Yeah,
P.
Definitely. I'd like to work with him potentially one day. So those two were really good. In London, again, it's a lot more quick fast food style stuff. Burger's great.
I checked out a place in London called Mildred's.
Mildred's, yeah, it's decent. Yeah, they're turned into a chain restaurant
now. Oh, really?
But they do some decent food, and they were probably one of the first vegan vegetarian restaurants in London, which is they've done superbly well.
And you guys have a lot of markets. I went to Vegan Nights while I was in the
amazing.
UK. That was
I'm
cool.
Surprised I didn't see you.
That's where I saw Robbie Lockie. Yeah.
Oh, mate, that is so good. Actually, that's a good. Glad you brought that up, because there's a market trader in there called Eat Che who do Vietnamese food, and it's absolutely incredible. They season to perfection. It's so flavorsome. And that's one of my top picks as well. But Vegan Nights is an awesome event. It's once a month in London in a place called Shoreditch. And it's basically, that is taking veganism to the mainstream, because not everyone, I reckon probably about 50% of vegan and non-vegan. And it's just such a cool event. Good music, amazing food vendors. And it's just a nice
It's awesome.
Night.
It was pumping when I was there. And
did you go in the summer?
I went in, I was there start of August, end of July.
Oh, right. Yeah, I could have been there.
So it was right in summertime.
Oh, wow.
God, we had some good food. I think I had a vegan pad thai.
Oh, nice.
It had vegan prawns on it.
Oh, and wow. That's from Cook Daily.
Yeah, Cook Daily. And then I went and had, I love cookies. Cookie obsessed. Yeah. From being a young child. It's like my guilty treat. I had like a cookie sandwich with coconut ice cream in it.
Oh, wow.
But it was like, I got talking to a few people there, and there was people from all walks of life, young, old, hipsters, you know, corporates. It was cool.
I like things like that, because that's some way you can take non-vegan friends and introduce them to vegans.
100%.
And I think the more things like that, the better. So
you guys do those markets better than anywhere I've been in the world. So that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I love vegan nights.
I also checked out Camden Markets as well.
Camden Markets, oh, there's some really good stuff there. What do we have there? Oh, another good vegan restaurant in London is Pureza, beautiful Italian restaurant. Sorry, I've probably been a bit too critical at the start. Actually, jogging my memory, there's some really good restaurants in London. Yeah, I feel as if what I'm maybe missing is that fine dining aspect that I miss. And that's what I sort of think of when I think of a dining experience. Mm. And that is probably the route I'm going to go down when I do open a restaurant. Probably not my first one, because I want to make my food for everyone. I want to make it accessible for everyone at a good cost point. I want to make it sort of palatable to everyone. So maybe when I do that fine dining restaurant, it'll be sort of down the line, a bit more of a passion project. And potentially, if I've got the staff and the skills and the finance behind it, try and get a Michelin star for that one.
No, I think you'll be there, mate. It's bloody exciting. We're coming to the end of this episode, but I just want to thank you for everything you're doing, because you bring this message, as I said, in such a cool way, but it's undeniable that you'd be having such a huge effect on the health of people globally, physically and mentally. So keep it up. I'm certainly going to be watching your journey from here, and I know that this is just the beginning for you. So if anyone listening is not following you, which I find is probably surprising, if you're not, then you might need to take your head out of the sand. if you're not following Gaz, how can they get in touch with you and find you?
It's just at Avantgarde Vegan on all social media, avantgardevegan.com. Yeah, that's basically me. I just search Gaz Oakley and you'll find me on somewhere on social media. Actually, someone told me that they Googled me the other day, and I had to look myself because there's some weird things coming up after my name. So it'd be like Gaz Oakley bodybuilding, because that's what I used to do before. Gaz Oakley girlfriend, Gaz Oakley age, Gaz Oakley, all this weird stuff. And I was like, oh my God, people are searching this.
People are interested in more than just your cooking, man.
That's the thing. That's what I've noticed. But no, thank you for that. And I really appreciate being on here. So when you asked me, it's crazy that we both happen to be in Bali. It just made sense to do it.
Well, it works, right?
An amazing setting. And thank you for pushing this and getting some really key people on. And for me, joining that list of people is an honor. So thank you.
I know people are really going to love this one. And, you know, I can't wait to get you out into Australia and make you fall in love with Bondi so that we can get some of your food down under.
That'd be amazing.
Been a pleasure, mate.
Thank you so much.
And that's this week's episode of the Plant Proof Podcast. Connect with myself and the Plant Proof community at plantproof.com and at plant_proof on Instagram. Don't forget to sign up to the newsletter to receive our free plant-based nutritional information, including recipes, important blogs, and much more direct to your inbox. Until next time, folks, I'm your host, Simon Hill. Keep your spacesuit plant-proof.